The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's transcribed story, The Weakest Link.
Hello, Gus. What happened in the fourth of Belmont, Gus? Oh. Well, where was Blue King? Oh. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Gus. No, nothing for tomorrow. Thanks, anyway.
How did you make out?
Wasn't even in the money.
Ah, it's tough.
Yeah. Al, another double over here. You want one, Bernie?
No, I'll stick to beer.
Seventh. You ran seventh. Didn't even get a play for my money.
You back him heavy?
$100 on a nose.
That's money, all right. I didn't know you could throw away that kind of dough.
I can't. Come on with that double, will you, Al?
Hey, you're kind of worked up, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm worked up.
Look, you can get this back.
With what, huh? I borrowed that dough on my car. I owe $200 around the neighborhood. How am I going to get it back? With what?
There's always a way. I'll take care of that, Al. Here you go. Keep the change.
Seventh. Everybody says the horse is ready. Can't lose. This is his day.
All right. Now, take it easy.
Edna's going to find out about this one for sure. I've been holding out on my paycheck, telling her I'm going to the dentist.
Al! You had enough, Willard.
What am I going to tell her, Bernie?
Don't tell her anything.
Said he couldn't lose. Could have made up everything I owe. You know that?
How much you need, Walter? Would, say, $600 help you?
Oh, don't talk crazy, Bernie. Who'd lend me 50, no less 600?
I'm not talking about lending. You can make $600. All you got to do is sign your name. Walter, how long have I known you?
Almost a year, I guess.
Okay, now look. I'm going to tell you something. If you ever tell anybody else, I'll swear you're lying. What's more, I'll beat the life out of you. Is that clear?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, I got a connection in the insurance business. You bring your car down to the garage where I work, you leave it a couple of days.
Yeah?
My connection will make up an insurance claim for an accident. One of his client's cars hit your car. Your car's a total wreck. We repair it for $1,200. We keep six, you keep six.
An accident? But my car's supposed to be in an accident.
Yeah. All you do is sign the paper, leave the car, we do the rest.
I couldn't do that, Bernie. I'd be scared of something like that.
Okay. I just thought you needed some dough, that's all. Al, one more beer for me.
Bernie.
It's all right, Waller. Forget about it. You'll get the dough some other way. And another dish of those cheese things, Al. You want a sandwich or anything before you go home, Waller?
No, thanks. Bernie.
Come on, ham on rye.
No, thanks. Bernie, is it very risky going into a deal like that?
In 1952, a fake accident ring was defrauding insurance companies in three eastern states. There were more than 20 people involved in the deal, including claim adjusters, garage mechanics, several insurance brokers, a lawyer, and friends and relatives of these people. As with every chain connecting a set of criminal activities, there was one weak link.
And Dr. Harris says I gotta have a gold filling in her back tooth there, and he says gold is more expensive.
Water.
Yeah?
We got a card in the mail this morning from Dr. Harris.
Oh, what card?
Like we get every 6 months when you haven't been in to see him.
Oh. Well, that's a mistake. His girl sends out those
what
cards.
What have you been doing with the money, Walter? Playing the horses again?
Now, look, if you're going to bring that up, honey...
You promised me you'd lay off, haven't you?
Now, who says I'm playing?
You promised me. You said...
All right, I promised. I said we could live in this crummy rented house in this crummy neighborhood. We could do without decent clothes. We could do without any fun.
We could have lots of things.
Oh, sure. On my terrific salary of $68.50 a week, we could have everything.
If you wouldn't throw away...
$68.50 a week. How could we ever be anything on that? All right, so I've been playing the horses. I've been trying to get out of this rat race to give us a decent place to live, to give you some clothes.
Oh, Walter. How many times have I
told you?
All right,
so I want good things for myself. How am I going to get what I'm entitled to?
Well, not the way you're trying it.
All right, I'm open to suggestions.
I haven't got any more suggestions.
Yeah, maybe we ought to save $2 a week out of my salary. At the end of a year, we'd have $104. At the end of two years...
Please, Walter, don't talk like that.
Well, what do you want me to do? I don't want to live like this. What do you want me to do?
Nothing, nothing. Just finish your dinner.
Edna?
What?
What do you want me to do?
I don't know, Walter. I guess you can't be any different from the way you are.
Edna, look. Look, baby, if there was some way for me to get hold of a few $100s, if I paid what we owe around here and started fresh, you
see...
Finish
your dinner, Walter. We'll talk about it later.
No. Let's talk about it now, huh?
If you could just save a little each week...
No. That would take forever, baby. I'm thinking of something else.
Walter...
Well, no. Not the horses. I swear it's not the horses. But if I got a nice chunk of dough, $500 or $600, we could start fresh, couldn't we? I mean, if I got this money free and clear, we could move out of this dump and maybe get a television set, huh?
We could just pay the grocer. I'd be happy.
Okay, we'll pay him.
Oh, Walter, stop
it. We will. I mean it. A clean slate. No debts, no horses. What do you say, huh?
I say, oh, Walter, if we only could. If there was only some way.
There is a way, baby. I've been thinking about it a long time. There's a way, Edna. I'm entitled to my share and I'm going to get it.
Back to The Weakest Link in just a moment.
What does the code of conduct mean to the American military man? On Christmas Eve, 1944, General Anthony McAuliffe sent this message to his men fighting at Bastogne. What's merry about all this, you ask? We're fighting. It's cold. We aren't home. All true. But what has the proud Eagle Division accomplished with its worthy comrades? Just this. We have stopped cold everything that has been thrown at us. How effectively this was done will be written in history. We continue to hold Bastogne. By holding Bastogne, we assure the success of the Allied armies. We are giving our country and our loved ones at home a worthy Christmas present. And by being privileged to take part in this gallant feat of arms, we are truly making for ourselves a Merry Christmas. That's what the code meant to General Anthony McAuliffe, the will to fight on. That's what it means to every American military man.
And now, Act Two of tonight's story, The Weakest Link. Among the suspicious circumstances told to us by one of the insurance companies was the fact that a certain broker seems to have more than average in accident claims involving almost total wrecks. As we began investigating this man's financial background, we found that he had a half interest in a garage that repaired wrecks. However, since no wrecked cars were observed to come into this garage or go out of it, Agent Reynolds and I decided to have a further look.
Morning.
Hi.
Your sign says you do all kinds of body work. How fast can you fix us up on that fender there?
Well, I'm kind of loaded up with work right now, Mac.
We'll be in town till the end of the week. If we leave it, could you straighten it out by then?
No, I don't think I could, mister. I'm expecting a car in this afternoon. I'll be busy with that for quite a while.
Well, this just needs straightening. If you could hammer it out.
Sorry, Mac. I can't handle it right now.
Well, could you recommend anybody? We're strangers in town.
Try the classified book. Plenty of them around.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
Okay, let's go.
But he's expecting one in this afternoon.
If I ever saw a guy that didn't want business, he's it.
Yeah. You know something, Dave?
What?
You can stop me if you've heard this one.
But you've seen that guy's face somewhere before.
Haven't you?
No.
I'd like to check the picture section.
Any category?
No, it's real vague. Probably turn out to be a dud.
No harm trying. Where to in the meantime?
Let's go back to the insurance office. I'd like to look over the last claim that guy worked on.
Yeah, so would I. For my dough, I don't think that shop has enough equipment to repair a busted headlamp.
On our return to Washington, I spent a full day in the photo identification section and finally found the picture I wanted. There was a very strong resemblance between the man in the picture and the man who ran the garage. The record attached to the picture listed 6 convictions ranging from car stealing to armed robbery. And there were a number of aliases, the last being Bernie Williams.
See what I mean, Bernie? Yeah, I see what you mean. You spent the $600 playing the horses.
I didn't spend it on horses. I owed money around the neighborhood. I paid that off. I paid off on my car.
The way I remember it, you owed $200 in the neighborhood and another $100 on the car. What happened?
Now, look, Bernie, I didn't come here to give you an itemized budget.
Okay. What did you come here for?
Bernie, what's the matter lately? You used to meet me down the street for a beer. We used to have a lot of laughs.
I'm busy lately.
You haven't been around to Kelly's place for over a month.
What do you want, Waller?
Lend me $200 just for a couple of weeks, Bernie.
No.
I'll pay it right back, I swear I will.
No.
Make it $100, my
pal. I'm not lending you anything. That's all you came here for, you better beat it.
Bernie, if I give you my solemn word...
Run along, Waller, I'm busy.
It's all right if that's the way you feel.
That's the way.
Bernie.
Look, you want me to draw you a diagram?
Bernie, I need that money real bad.
Yeah, I know. You got something hot out at Jamaica this afternoon. He's going to pay 20 to 1. You're going to make a big
deal.
Okay, killing.
Don't lend me the money. Give it to me.
What did you say?
You used my car to collect that $1,200. All I got was $6. I'm entitled
Get
to...
Get out of here.
I'm entitled to another
Get out
$100.
Before I throw this wrench right smack into your stupid face.
Look, I'm entitled to another $100, Bernie, and I don't think you're in a position to refuse me.
Why not?
Because I don't think you are, that's all.
Go on, tell me. Why not?
Never mind.
Tell me, Walter. You aren't thinking of pulling a little squeeze play, are you?
I'm going, Bernie. But I think you'll be sorry you didn't give me what I was entitled to in the first place.
What I'm sorry about, I don't give you this wrench right where you need it.
Heck! All right, Bernie. I'll remember that. Believe me, I'll remember that.
I remember that. Believe me, I remember
Walter.
That. I remember that,
Walter.
Bernie. What? What's the matter?
Been talking for the last half hour. I can't get any sleep.
Talking? Who's talking? I've been wide awake.
All right. If you've been awake, then go to sleep, please.
What was I talking about?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a jumble. Something about Bernie and you're entitled to some money. Walter, You're not starting to worry again, are you? I thought when we moved away from that neighborhood and...
You don't call this street Park Avenue, do you?
Oh, Walter.
Just because we don't have a bunch of kids yelling in the hallway.
I thought you liked it here.
Oh, it's all right. It'll do till we get something better.
Well, maybe after you talk to Mr. Slauson and they give you a raise...
I did talk to him last week.
Well, you didn't tell me.
He turned me down cold. He said I was lucky they didn't fire me.
Walter.
Well, he said I was late half the time. I did a lousy job, and if it wasn't so hard to get
Walter,
help...
Walter, don't talk about yourself like that.
You know what I said?
I can imagine. But Mr. Slauson had no
right... You bet
right...
he didn't. I told him so, right to his face. I said he had his nerve telling me
Walter,
that.
He didn't fire you anyway, did he?
Yeah, he fired me, the stupid jerk.
Oh, no. When?
Last week.
Why didn't...
Well, why should I bother you? Anyway, I'm glad he did, baby. I got all the ideas. And better than working for an idiot like Slauson.
They fired you last week.
Yeah. But I was in to see a guy today about a proposition where I won't have to knock myself out from 9 to 5 every day.
What kind of a proposition? You mean a job?
He runs a garage for another guy that's in the insurance business, you see. I'm going to go to this other guy, the one in the insurance business, and give it to him straight. I'm going to say...
Walter, I don't know what you're talking about. What kind of a job is it?
Well, it's something very good. And you know what?
What?
I didn't handle it right today. I should have gone straight to the insurance guy. I can see that now. This garage guy is just a front man, you know what I mean?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, it's all right, baby. You don't have to know. I know that's what counts. I don't know why I didn't come right out to say it, but I know what's going on. They'll have to give me a job.
And I'm going to ask for $150 a week to start. How do you like that?
Back to the weakest link in just a moment.
Friends, this is Jimmy Wallington. You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was born in 1858. After graduation from Harvard, he traveled for a year in Europe and then wrote his first book titled The Naval War of 1812. He entered politics in 1881 in the State Assembly of New York. At the start of the Spanish-American War, he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy, but he became a colonel in the United States Volunteer Cavalry Regiment that took part in the Cuban campaign. After a term as governor of the state of New York, he was elected Vice President of the United States in 1900. After the death of President McKinley, he became president and was re-elected in 1904. Important events of his administration included the establishment of self-government in Cuba and the beginning of the Panama Canal. Well, you should have his name by now, but in case you don't, here's one more important clue. His cavalry regiment was known as the Rough Riders. Yes, he was Theodore Roosevelt, 26th President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
And now, Act Three of tonight's story, The Weakest Link. Having tentatively identified the man who ran the garage and having established the fact that the garage was poorly equipped to rebuild wrecked cars, we began to investigate individual claims against the insurance company. Agent Reynolds posed as an adjuster, and after several days, he had an interview with a man named Walter Dealey.
I keep the car parked right here in front of the house. That is, when I can find the place.
Pretty tough these days.
Oh, yeah, you can say that again. If I could afford a garage, I'd sure get one.
A car is expensive enough without that.
Yeah, you bet it is. No, it's a good thing that guy had insurance with your company. You should have seen this baby after the accident.
Pretty badly banged up, huh?
Always ready for the junkie.
Mind if I look in at the front end?
No. Go right ahead. Oh, incidentally, how come you guys are doing this?
Routine. We got a pretty big bill for this job. We just want to see what we're paying for.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. But the guy that looked it over after the wreck can tell you what shape it was in.
Yes, I have his report right here.
Yeah, that was really banked up.
You were hit over here on the right side, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Our client must have been coming pretty fast.
Oh, yeah, you bet he was. And right through the red light, too.
And that was on 4th Street and Boulevard, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
And that was the report, anyway.
Yeah, that's right, 4th and Boulevard. I couldn't remember if it was 4th or 5th, you know.
Anyway, he was going too fast. But you're satisfied that the claim was paid promptly?
Oh, it sure was.
Well, thanks, Mr. Dealey. Sorry to have interrupted your dinner.
Well, that's all right, as long as you found what you wanted.
I think I did.
Come around anytime.
I might at that. Thanks, Mr. Dealey. Good night.
By the time Agent Reynolds finished talking to Walter Dealey, we knew we had a case. Dealey had been badly rehearsed in the details of his accident, not only agreeing on the wrong street as the scene of the accident, but also on the wrong side of the car. In the report, both cars were described as having been hit on the left. With this information and similar evidence gathered by other agents, the director gave the order to make arrests. When we went back to Dealey's house 2 days later, his wife told us he was out interviewing someone for a new job.
So I told him, any job you want to give me, Mr. Coleman, it's okay with me.
Yeah, that's what he said to me over the phone.
Yeah. You're not sore, are you, Bernie, because I went to see Mr. Coleman?
What do you think?
Well, the way I figured it, there's plenty of money in this for all of us, so why should you be sure?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Tell me, where does Mr. Coleman live? I thought you said it. A couple of miles out of town. A
few minutes more, we'll be there.
What do you suppose he wanted to see me at home for?
Well, he doesn't like to talk about this deal down at his office.
Oh. So he phoned you and...
And he told me to bring you out to the house, yeah.
You know, Bernie, I liked Mr. Coleman. He didn't get worked up and talk loud or anything when I told him what I wanted.
He's a very smooth apple, Mr. Coleman.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Bernie, That's a cute little secretary he's got down there. If I work in his office, it wouldn't be too bad a situation, would it?
No, that wouldn't be bad at all.
Yeah. What's the matter?
No, sir.
Well, what are we stopping here for?
This is where we're going.
What?
This is it. Don't you like it here?
Bernie.
I like it. No street lights, no cops coming by in prowl cars. Nice, quiet, undeveloped area.
Yeah, come on, Bernie. Mr. Coleman said we should be there by 9.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't see any sense in
You staying. Don't see anything, stupid little jerk.
Now, look, Bernie, Mr. Coleman promised...
Stupid me. Little jerk. You don't think he wants to see you out of this house, do you?
Well, if he told you over the
he
phone...
He told me to take care of you. Once and for all, he said.
Come on, Bernie, start the car. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. I mean it now, Bernie.
Oh, you stupid little jerk.
Come on, Bernie, come
stupid,
on.
Stupid.
Come on.
What made you think you could get away with it, huh? You like Coleman. You like his little, his secretary, huh? You're stupid. You hear that? Stupid.
Ah, cut it off, Bernie.
Plenty in it for all of us, huh? Why should I be so, huh?
He got stop, will you, Bernie?
Stupid little jerk. Get out of the car.
What for?
I'm going to give you the worst beating you ever had in your life.
No, Bernie. Bernie, listen, maybe I was wrong.
Get out.
Mr. Coleman.
If you try to run away, I'll blow a hole right through your yellow back.
Now, please, Bernie, if I was wrong, you tell me, huh?
Come on, out.
Bernie, if I promise never to bother you or Mr. Coleman again,
come on,
all right?
Come on, Walter.
Please, Bernie, please,
Open
huh?
Open the door and come out here.
Please. Bernie, can we talk, Bernie?
Huh? Come on, Walter. Come right over here and get it, huh? Come on. Let's get it over with.
When Bernie Williams arrived back at the garage, he was taken into custody along with his boss, Lawrence Coleman. 20 other members of the ring were similarly rounded up. The following day, Walter Dealey was found, badly beaten, in a deserted area outside the city. When Dealey learned that he was under arrest along with Williams, he quickly volunteered as a witness for the state. And it was his testimony chiefly that sent all members of the ring to prison for terms ranging from 2 to 10 years. Dealey, for his part, was sentenced to 18 months. And thus a chain of conspiracy was destroyed by... The Weakest Link.
In tonight's transcribed story, Larry Haynes played the part of Walter Dealey, and Bill Zuckert was Bernie Williams. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Louis Pelletier. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based upon Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. And the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.